This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our holiday special program. We wish to wish you and yours a happy holiday season. Today, we'll look ahead to Michigan State football for 2013 with Lansing State General Reporter Graham Couch and Detroit Free Press reporter Joe Rexroad. This is a pre-recorded program, so please do not call in. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you and glad you're both in. This is our last program for this year, but we got to look ahead to next year.
And so this is your last one of these, right? This is your last one. I've done a few of these with you. So, well, happy holidays to you, and I'm honored to be doing this last one with you. And, you know, hopefully I can we can get through this without me totally screwing it up. I can't speak for Graham, though.
I will probably screw it up, but I'm also very happy to be here and glad you asked me.
Hey, glad you're both here. And we're going to look ahead to spring football. I mean, there's going to be a lot of challenges for Mark D'Antonio this year. Are there more people leaving than what we thought was before the season or after last year?
Leaving as like, in
graduating or just leaving the program?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously we're still waiting to find out about those three juniors who are all, I think, you know, prime candidates to leave. I have a small senior class, so, but I mean, I expect that we're going to find out that Le'Veon Bell and Deion Sims are leaving, and you know, maybe a better chance that Will Golston stays, but that's a couple of big pieces to replace for an offense that was already struggling so much. So that's, to me, what spring ball is about. It's about figuring out a way to have a productive offense.
Yeah, I think Le'Veon has to go. Sims, if he's as high a prospect as everybody thinks he may be, he probably has to go. The thing about him, he probably could raise his stock with a big senior year. So there's an argument to be made, I think, much more than with Le'Veon, to why he should come back. Will Golston, you know, the Mel Kiper coming out, you know, recently saying he should come back. There, you know, whether you know he makes that decision or not, the other guy whose draft stock may or may not be up to a point that it's worth considering for him is Tarquez Dennard. I'm not sure to what extent that would be a huge blow to lose both starting corners in the same year. But again, you don't hear a lot of that. I think that would be a surprise. But, you know, obviously if you lose, I mean, the best receiver they had this year in the passing game was Deion Sims. And if you lose that passing game that wasn't that good, there's a little bit of concern there.
I know I'm not shocked anymore about guys leaving. I mean, we've seen it year in and year out, but now I guess I'm more shocked when guys stay. Because, I mean, you know, you look at it. Why should they stay and put in all this work and all this time and effort to play 12 games? And if they're good, then it might increase their stock a little bit, but it won't. More than likely, won't increase it from going to the second round or first round or from third to second. So I almost think sometimes they might as well just leave after the junior year because I don't know. You want to give me an argument the other way where they should come back for their senior year?
Well, I mean, I would say to get your degree for one thing. Yeah. I mean, you stay in school, you are here for a degree as well. I mean, that's one argument. I think your argument is. It's harder to argue against it in football because I think in football, it's such a violent sport. You have a short shelf life.
Injuries.
I mean, especially like Graham said with Le'Veon Bell. I mean, I don't know why you want to put on that kind of mileage on your legs if you're really not going to raise your stock. Now, some players, I think, can raise their stock. I agree that Sims could. I think Golston, and I think Kiper makes a point. Golston had a disappointing year. A lot of people thought he was a first-round pick going this year, you know. And I think if he really got better, he needs to get better. I mean, you can see that he's still not a finished product. Then I think he could be a first-round pick. You saw maybe Johnny Adams lost a little bit of stock. Maybe I'm not 100% convinced of that he was a real high pick a year ago. But maybe he lost a little bit with some of the early struggles he had. So no, it's hard for me to really argue too much against it, other than to say. If you have to look at each case on an individual basis, there are some guys who can actually improve their chances and make more money.
And it's different than basketball. I mean, you know, the argument you can always make in basketball, you look at a guy like Mateen Cleaves, who legacy in basketball, if that's important. Mateen Cleaves did not really have much of a pro career, but he'll be able to walk on this campus the rest of his life as a legend, and there's probably value in that. But he also plays a sport where the risk of, you know, a debilitating injury that changes your career is different. And when you talk about the degree, you know, that people point to, they do come here for that. Most people go
in. Or they're supposed to come here for that.
Well, yeah, but most people are going into professions that are helped by a degree. The NFL does not care.
Yeah.
And not only do they not care about that, they don't even care when you probably go into coaching or broadcasting afterwards if you have a degree, if you played. So, you know, if Joe and I were sophomores in college or juniors in college and the Chicago Tribune called and said, you know, we'd like you to come write for us, we probably would have left.
Yeah, that's fine, except the only – and I agree with that, except, you know, first of all, not all these guys get to coach or go into broadcasting. Yeah,
true.
So, you know, I mean
– but you can always get the degree.
You can always get the degree. That is true. So, I mean, that, you know, and I like what Michigan State does with the scholarship, but the George Webster Scholarship. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a good program because – you know, it's important. It is important for most people to ultimately have it.
Yes, it is, and I know we all agree on that. But you know, we know a lot of these kids. They come here with the idea of getting to the next level as soon as they can, and you know, I think by hook or crook, a lot of them will just go on and just try to move on to the next level and try to increase their stock. I mean, you know, for Deion Sims and even Will Golston, I mean, if they stay, that's good for them. But how do they help themselves? I mean, we know they can't help themselves financially, but unless they really, really move up. And how many guys have we seen over the years that really, you know, make a quantum leap or go to a second round from a second round to a first round? And you never know, because I thought all the guys that we had talked about last year, Joe, they went lower than what they thought they would. I mean, Kirk Cousins went in the fourth round. We all had him projected for the second round. So,
well, yeah. And here's the thing, too, and when you're 21, it's hard to picture the reasons for staying power, and it depends on your position. But if you look at a guy like Kirk Cousins, he went as a fourth-round pick. And, you know, and obviously things could change, and, you know, he may struggle later. He may not get much better. Who knows? But based on what people have seen early from him, he looks like he's going to have a 10-year NFL career.
It's a nice value. It's a pick.
And so there's a second contract there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You look at a guy like Mark Sanchez, who came out early, whose college coach said he needed another year, and there's a guy who's gotten paid. So don't get me wrong, the money's there, but he may not be in the NFL in two or three years.
He's getting worse.
And so, you know, if you're Le'Veon Bell, if you're a running back, it's very, you know, you can't think contracts down the road. But certain players at certain places, I mean, I guess you can think about just being a better football player. You can have confidence in yourself, and you know that if you get that shot, you need to improve here, and it'll help you stay in the NFL. But
in the case of Golston, I do think he can improve his stock because I think he's still such a raw player. I mean, just his technique, you can see he just doesn't have that. Yeah, I just feel like he can get a lot better just in terms of the fundamentals of the game. I think he has the power and the size and all that. So I think guys like that, yeah, I think you can improve it. But yeah, a guy like Bell, there's nothing he needs skill-wise. He is what he is. He is a certain speed and size, and he knows how to play the game at his position at a high level. Some guys still don't know how to play the game well enough, and that I think Golston falls into that category.
Yeah, now, when we look at next year's team, is there a lot of players on this team that need to make a good improvement like Golston? I mean, you know, how much improvement does Andrew Maxwell need to make, become a really good quarterback? The offensive line, that's about the only position where everyone is set, and they'll just, you know, make a slight improvement. But on defense and on the other positions, how much of a leap would you say those guys have to make to try to get back to like a 9 or 10 win season?
Well, I think the offensive line has to make a big improvement too. I mean, yeah, they're going to get those guys back, but they have to get better. They have to be able to play together early in a season. Before all these injuries this year, we were still watching that offensive line saying, that's not what we thought that was going to be. That's a big thing. And, they, you know, honestly, Mark D'Antonio, if there's one thing you look at his whole tenure, he has not yet been able to put together the kind of offensive line you really need for this offense. They've still had some great offensive teams because of some great skill, but that's a big question. I mean, really, his best offensive line was probably his 2007 team with John Elway. So, but I think Maxwell certainly has to take a big leap. The receivers have to take a big leap. Whoever's playing running back, maybe the freshman Gerald Holmes. There are a lot of guys, and on defense, I think you know, I think they should be pretty good. If they have everyone back, like you said, I assume Denard's coming back. If Golson comes back, their linebackers should be outstanding. So I don't know if they need a big leap from anyone there. They just need to, finish games a little better. But I think a better offense would help that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this defense, if there was an adequate offense this year, would be talked about in national circles. I mean, obviously maybe not – they didn't create the turnovers and other things, but those things really stood out because they weren't scoring points. Maxwell, to me, I think it was interesting. We did a piece at the midway point, Maxwell at the midpoint, wrote a column. He was better six games in than he was 12 games in. And some of that may be confidence in losing it in receivers. Who knows what the rest of it's for. But, I thought at six games in, if he continued to progress to that level by the end of the year, you might have a pretty decent quarterback. And, I don't think he was a very good quarterback at the end of the year. And that, there are a lot of things that went into this year that can create that. But at the end of the day, I don't think they'll put up with another 6-6 season to let him grow. He'll be a senior. He'll have to perform early and show he's made improvement next year.
Yeah, and it's weird because the receivers got better.
Yeah.
Yet he seemed – in the last six games, certainly the last drive at Wisconsin was outstanding. And then you thought that would be sort of maybe a turning point for him. And actually from that point, he really struggled. I know Nebraska has a good pass defense, but, really struggled in that game. Made some big plays. Made some big plays against Northwestern. Then, of course, at Minnesota, he made some really head-scratching plays.
And so he needs to improve, we'd say, a lot. D'Antonio said he's going to stress the quarterback taking some hits in practice now. I look forward to that because, quarterback for all the years we've been here, I know I've been here, quarterbacks have never taken a hit.
It's about time these quarterbacks get hit more often.
Exactly. I felt that way for a long time.
Earl wants his quarterbacks on the ground, man.
It's a sign that you're not playing well as a quarterback.
Yes.
Because when you're a star as a quarterback, nobody touches you in practice.
That's right.
And when they say you're going to get hit in practice, that means they really don't care if you're there on Saturday. And that's a telling sign.
Well, if you remember, it was that press conference, and I don't remember. I asked him some kind of question. It was sort of like, what is the big thing you need to do offensively? And that was his first answer was, quarterback, you need to get hit, you're right. But that was telling. In his mind, he's never going to come out and say what he's thinking on players. He's very different from Tom Izzo in that way. He's very protective, and he won't say publicly. Mm-hmm. But that answer tells you what he thinks of Maxwell's performance this year.
Yeah.
Now, what about special teams? We're going to have a new kicker next year. They've talked about the one they've got coming in, but I know they've had a couple of guys who walked down in camp who are pretty good high school kickers. So how do you see this whole kicking thing coming front?
That's impossible to predict. Yeah. You remember Kevin Mumma was the big scholarship guy they brought in. Oh, Kevin Mumma's going to replace Swenson. Well, guess what? Yeah. The walk-on beat him out. Conroy. Now, of course, everyone's down on Conroy. I mean, he missed too many field goals this year, no question. But I don't know. Mumma would be next in line, but of course they just signed the kid out of Ohio, and Mike Sadler has a big leg. He could be in there. A walk-on could emerge. That'll be one of the interesting things about spring.
And kickers are – it is a weird position. It's hard to predict because so much of it is confidence. And, when I was covering Western Michigan, they had a kicker one year that once he lost his confidence, I could predict when he was going to – he was so rattled. Even in practice, you're like, this kid has no chance. But he was a kid, scholarship kid, Fort Lauderdale. They thought he was going to be great. Because kicking scholarships are rare. Really, most schools give one. So there really isn't – it's not like the SEC and Big Ten compared to the MAC and with defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Your kickers, it's like they have one that year, you get a good one. Kid was a total mess. You don't know who's going to have it, who's not. I think, you may miss Dan Conroy. He did miss some this year, but he also made a lot, and he made a lot of long field goals. And at the college level, to me, what happened with Conroy and what happened the way the corners were kind of judged with Adams and Denard and some of the times they got beat was mostly the reason that was so noticeable was because there were so few points on offense. There are just very few great kickers in college. Yeah. There are very few shutdown corners anywhere in football. And the Michigan State needed that out of all those guys because they couldn't score points.
Yeah. And, let me ask you this. Are we going to see a lot of wholesale changes just because they need so much help. I mean, will we see maybe more of the second, third string guys might move up to first string or in the top two levels just because they need more guys to help out in so many areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there'll be definitely some position battles, some depth chart. I mean, who knows? Maybe something could happen at receiver. You know, I mean, hey, I know fans want to know about D'Anthony Arnett. You know, does he stick it out and really get after it and, you know, try to make a move past some people? On the offensive line, you're going to have three tackles battling out for two spots. You know, it's hard to predict the third stringer moving up. And I look at defense. And I don't see a lot of chance for major moves. You know, you've got, I think at safety they're going to be set. At corner, that's a big question. Who's the corner opposite Denard? On the defensive line a little bit, some of the young guys inside. But, yeah, I think receiver. And then, of course, a lot of fans ask the question, you know, and you alluded to it earlier, Graham, just the Andrew Maxwell job security question. I mean, does he have to perform early? Is there just no question that as a fifth-year senior he's starting?
Yeah.
I mean, I think especially the way D'Antonio does things, I expect him to start next year and to have a fair amount of job security. But at the same time, does Tyler O'Connor make a huge move? And or does Damian Terry come in as a true freshman and just blow everyone away with his ability and push for playing time? I mean, that's certainly worth asking and looking at because, you know, Andrew Maxwell, they talked him up a lot last year, a lot. And you look back and it's like, were they trying to build him up? Yeah, maybe some, but I can't believe that was just let's give the kid confidence talk. I believe that's because that's how he performed in practice. And then you go into the game, and it's different.
You know, some people are great practice players. Some people are great gamers. There have been a lot of quarterbacks, and you know, in this, you know, Drew Stanton was one who was not a great practice quarterback, and he's a gamer. You know, and there are guys who are just better on Saturdays. And I think you're right. You will see him as the starter to begin the season. I just find it hard to believe he wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But I also think if they're struggling when they get to October as a Big Ten play, you know, it when you're coming off a 11-win season or a couple of them in a row, there's maybe, and I could be completely wrong on this, but there might be a tendency more to have a little leeway. When you, 6-6, there's urgency. And when coaches start to get nervous about things, they make moves that you wouldn't think they'd ordinarily make when they feel that things are slipping from them or whatnot. They're not going to let one player bring down what they built. And I'm not saying that'll happen with Maxwell. He may come back next year and be fine. It was his first year starting. Kirk Cousins is a sophomore, was nowhere near what he was as a junior and senior. You know, that may happen with him, too. And they obviously saw something, because you're right, they did pump him up. I mean, they pumped everybody
up. Warner said no fall off, you know, from Cousins to Maxwell, which is...
And usually you don't get that. Coaches are usually a little more protective of overhyping somebody. And a lot of this season, to me, you know, people can say, you know, the media overhype the team. The coaches were really high on this team. I think
yes,
the team
were
underachieved based in their own heads. They thought they had something special coming in, and it didn't happen.
Yes, and most of the problem, as we've talked about, was on offense.
Yes, it was. I'm almost hesitant to ask this question because Joe, as Joe knows, I've asked this question. I've debated this for years and years. But do they have enough speed?
Yes, we've had this discussion many, many times. I don't look at this team and say their issue is that they lack speed. Again, even at receiver, and we've talked about this, you know, Keyshawn Martin, that's a speedy guy that they lost and they miss him. And some of these receivers have had trouble getting separation at times, but I don't think it's a speed thing. I think it's a technique thing. B.J. Cunningham got himself 10 yards of cushion because he was a technician. So... I think they've got – I mean, I think Denard is fat. I think Denard plays the NFL, and so does Johnny Adams, you know. And Isaiah Lewis has a chance. So I don't think that's the problem. I mean, you can always have, like, the Big Ten versus SEC debate, but within the Big Ten, I think they're fine in that way.
Well, and often when you think about speed, you think defense. Is their defense fast enough? You think, does a team have enough team speed? And, I mean, defense – I mean, that linebacking core, I mean, if –
yeah.
It's if you watch Tywan Jones close out on people, I mean, that's...
And Danico's Allen.
Those are phenomenal. It's a terrific linebacking group. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better group of linebackers in college football, and it may exist somewhere, but you know...
Not many.
No. And it wide out, I think you're right. I mean, a guy like McGarrett Kings is not slow. He was just a freshman who wasn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Burbridge is not slow. And, you know, Benny Fowler is probably not a number one wideout, but there are many great receivers who've played here, who played other places that have not been speedsters. And that really isn't what makes you great. It doesn't hurt, but, you know, it's ultimately not what makes you good at that position.
But I will say, if there's one place, and actually we talked about this earlier this year, Earl, yeah, where they didn't have enough speed, it was that running back. Because
that's
they
right.
didn't have that guy to get to the edge to complement Le'Veon Bell.
See, he's, I thought Caper used to be that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what was surprising. When Caper was in high school, I mean, that kid was unbelievably fast. I mean, maybe...
Yeah, as a little, I've always thought with Caper, he was always just a step away from breaking it so many times in his career when he got the ball, you know. And it's, obviously, it's a different level. I mean, Edwin Baker is the guy you look at.
Sure.
That's the speed back.
And they missed that this year a ton.
They missed that for sure.
If there was a way they could have talked him into another year. And I'm not saying he made the wrong decision for himself, because he would not have been the guy probably. But
you know what? He still may have had a chance to go higher just by another year of working on his body and working on his skills, something like that. You know, I don't know. But he didn't. I mean, he barely got picked up. So.
And my guess is they would have used him in a lot of different ways, the way this offense developed. By the end of the year, they would have used him. They would have tried to get that speed with the ball in his hands.
Well, you know, guys, Dan Roschak took a lot of hits this year. I don't know if it was fair or unfair, but I thought the guy who won was the offensive coordinator and took him to 11 win games both years, 2 years in a row. And yes, they fell off, but somehow I just didn't think it was his fault. How do you guys feel about Dan Roschak? Is that an area where maybe they need to make a change?
Oh, he needs to be fired immediately. There's no question. No, I'm kidding. No,
There will be people who will shut off the show after that.
Get on
message boards.
Uh-huh. All right. No, it's just like with Maxwell, who, again, I think Maxwell was up and down, took a lot of blame. I think it's very easy. I've always thought like the easiest non-head coach to criticize would be the offensive coordinator. Everybody can see what the play call is and whether it works or not. Of course, it was a terrible call if it doesn't work. Look, the whole offensive operation was subpar, so you have to look at him and say, well, you're the coordinator of this offense. There are always – I've never watched a football game and not – wondered about at least a couple offensive play calls.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never, at any level, any offensive coordinator, I've never said, those are great. Every play was great.
And every time somebody runs up the middle and only gets a yard, it's awful.
Yeah.
Every time they bust it open for like 20, they really saw something.
Oh, you know? Very nice. way to mix it up. Yeah, so look, I just don't look at it and say, I mean, like you said, Earl, I mean, last year he was a coordinator. They had a couple bad games at Notre Dame, Nebraska, and he gave himself heat for the Notre Dame game. I did think the Nebraska game last year was, they didn't have a good plan. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, did you see what they did against Wisconsin in the championship game? I mean, I thought not only did they execute, I thought they had some great, perfectly timed play calls in that game. He was a coordinator for that. I mean, I just, look, you know, the old cliche X's and O's, Jimmy's and Joe's, not to take any responsibility away from him, but no, I don't think that I've heard this question. What if Don Treadwell was this team's offensive coordinator? I don't see any difference at all in the performance. I just, it's D'Antonio's offense. These are the players and, they all have to get better, but the idea that firing him would solve something, I don't buy it.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's the philosophy is that of the head coach.
Yes.
And so you have to do what you can within that philosophy. Do I think the offense – I think the offense is something that works when you have the horses to do it. I don't think it's a great offense. It's not the offense I would run if I was in a college football team. But within that is the coordinator, you know, doing the best he can and doing a decent job with the parts that are there. Probably – was there enough creativity this year? I don't think there was. That you know, there wasn't enough tempo, there wasn't enough attempts to really do other things. That Indiana game to me was really, really telling. You had a team that hurt Michigan State's defense as much as any team all year, with as little talent other than probably Eastern Michigan as they faced all year, and that was done with a gimmick offense. And there's nothing wrong with that when you don't. I mean, Kevin Wilson.
Let's not forget what that offense did in the second half of that game. It did nothing.
Nothing.
So, right. You know, no. And that's the thing. Teams adjust, and that's the problem with those offenses.
But there were, you never. The one time you did see Temple all year was at Notre Dame. And it was the only time against Notre Dame they moved the ball.
Right.
And then the next week, Mark D'Antonio came out and said, you know, I thought the question was, did you not use it enough? And he was like, oh, we used it too much. It was a little. Yeah. It was a baffling response. But that's the philosophy. And, you know, to me, you won 22 games the 2 years before with that philosophy. You'd built, you'd had more success in 5 years before this year at MSU than any other coach had ever had. And since, what, Biggie or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Duffy, what, Duffy, whatever. I don't know. How long?
You're fine.
Yeah, yeah.
My, forget the point.
The 50s. Before I was born. And the yeah, so I mean, you'd had success. You get this game, you get this mulligan to me.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep having a mulligan, but you get the mulligan. It worked, and it didn't this year. And I think they thought it was going to work. And you know, that's up to them to make adjustments.
See, now Michigan State fans, see, I disagree with you and your idea that, I mean, I just love this offense. I love this offense, and I think it's the best offense to run. But, yes, you have to have horses. Yeah. I mean, USC, that's this offense. Alabama, that's this offense. Now, yeah, they have unbelievable talent. But to me, Michigan State fans remember John L. Smith, and he ran the spread, and my goodness, it was fun, and they're all over the place to move the ball. But, man, when they needed to pick up that third and two in the fourth quarter holding a lead.
Yeah, they couldn't do it.
You know, it's just – that those offenses are for teams that have inferior talent. If you want to win championships like they aspire to here, then you need to get those kind of players. And when you can actually run right at someone and set up play action and you have the horses outside, I think it's that's why it's an NFL offense.
And you see him start to recruit with Damian Terry, a mobile quarterback.
Sure.
I think they do see the value in that.
Hell
because,
yeah.
Because, I mean, if you think about, you know, when Dan LeFever beat them here a couple of years ago, and that was a good central team, but there was a guy – it was a nightmare on third and two and third and three.
Yeah.
There was just that because you had that mobility really adds a whole other dimension. They don't really have that right now, and that hurts. The one thing I will say is, and maybe Aaron Burbridge wasn't ready for this year, even though he had that one game, he's a true freshman. But in this day in football, when you have a guy who can really play, you can move him around, and five catches for 65 yards is no longer a good game. There's no excuse not to have 9 or 10 catches because you – a good offense can put a guy in places and make him difficult to defend. And you didn't see that this year. I would have done so much more with Deion Sims, I always thought. Here's a guy that's just a ferocious weapon that was under – he would disappear for quarters at a time. And he was injured for a big part of the year, and that hurt too. But, you know, they could have moved him outside and done other things with him, and you didn't see that.
Yeah, now, this brings to mind another question. How much better – do they have to get at recruiting players or recruiting top-notch players? Because it's like, yeah, they're getting good players, but I don't see them bringing in many outstanding players or players that really can be, you know, difference makers. How many difference makers should a team have? And does Michigan State need to just get more players who can make a genuine difference in the game?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one indication of recruiting, I think, is the NFL draft. And I think you look at this last year and look at what's going to happen in the next couple of years, there's a huge difference between now and the several years before that when they barely supplied the NFL with anyone, you know, for a stretch there. So, I don't know. I think they've gotten quite a few difference makers. I mean, if you even go back to the first class with Kirk Cousins and, you know, the Bakers, the Bells, the Golsons, you know, Greg Jones, I don't know. I mean, you always need more, and when you're competing with Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Michigan the way they can recruit, there's never, like, I don't think Michigan State ever say, well, we've got enough difference makers, but when you look at, you know, a Worthy and you know, the Adams and Denard and some of these guys who weren't big recruits, and you look at the kind of players they became, I'd say this staff, Keyshawn Martin, no, I mean, they're finding these guys, some of them, Golston, everyone in the world wanted him. Then you have a guy like, you know, Darquez Denard, who no one wanted. But I think this staff has definitely been able to evaluate and develop. And this year on offense, you look at it and say, well, have they fallen off in that? Fair question. I mean, Andrew Maxwell was a major recruit. And some of those guys, you know, Burbridge, I do think, will be a very good player. Deion Sims, another guy. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be challenging moving forward just because those three schools are on the uptick and, you know, with very good coaches and, you're surrounded by those three. That's tough. But so far, these guys have done pretty well, I think, and especially in Ohio. And, you know, a guy like Damian Terry coming in, he looks to me like maybe a difference maker.
You know, the thing that – a couple telling things to me is, one, that physically they can compete at a level that you hadn't seen since the Saban era at the end of it, where kind of the leftovers from the Saban maybe that year after he left, where they don't get pushed around. You know, when John L. Smith made the comment when he was here, something about, I thought this was the worst thing he ever could have said, but you're never going to compete with Michigan and Ohio State for that.
Always would say you don't want to get in the phone booth with them.
Yeah. And
you have no chance when you say that.
Yes. You do, because, you know, even in the, you know, Michigan State and Notre Dame, even when they were losing to them in the 90s, those were physical games, and Michigan State's kind of brand and rep has always been as a very physical team, and they're there right now. I mean, they lose to Michigan. You know, you could look in that crowd at the Big House this year in the fourth quarter, and there was fear. You could just smell it
because
they saw it coming. They're a field goal away, a fourth down play away from the way we look at the season being different, the way people over there look at their season being very different. And you know, it didn't happen, but physically, Michigan State is very much there. I think that. That's incredibly important. The other thing, it's not abnormal for when you're building a program, you see this sometimes, you have a group that plays together for a while that grabs their jobs young, like Cousins and Cunningham and Martin, the guys who, you know, struggle and kind of, the group under them is often, even though it doesn't get a whole lot of time, and just doesn't become a great player. It's usually usually there's a gap there. There's a year where there's a little bit of fall off. You know, I've seen that other places. It's hard to do, and I think this group of wideouts, what should have been noticed earlier is if B.J. Cunningham – or B.J. Cunningham, if anybody on this group was at that level of the Cunningham, or you would have seen them emerge prior to this. You would have seen more of a role. Now, I know you feel there are injuries that kind of have, you know –
Well, with Fowler.
With Fowler, specifically, yeah.
I think Fowler could have emerged. I thought going into last year he was going to make himself be on the field from what I'd seen the year earlier. But, you know, because Keith Nichol, of course.
Right.
But basically they played those three main guys every snap last year.
Yes. Now, how much rope should we all give Coach D'Antonio? I mean, he had this, you know, the one-off year here after going back-to-back 11-win seasons. But how much rope should he get? Because we know a lot of people were very, weren't happy with that 6-6 year. But do we have to give him enough rope? Or will he get, maybe, does he get, what, 2 more years or 3 more years? I don't know. So where do he stand right now?
I'd give him a rope warehouse. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Like Graham said, I mean, you got to look at this program and where it was and where it is. It's a good program. Had a bad year. I mean, yeah, if they go 6-6 next year, I mean, every year can change things.
Yeah.
You know, coming off 2009, it was like, well, third year, wait, what's going on? And then, boom, 11 wins, and now it's like, well, the guy's untouchable. Now it's a 6-6 year, and you're asking how much rope should he get. I mean, 1 year can change things a lot. So next year with this team and that schedule, if they have a similar season, then I think certainly it's fair to say, okay, what kind of changes does D'Antonio need to make? But as far as looking at him, I mean, he's the best coach around here. I would argue, and I know Nick Saban's doing amazing things now with his NFL team in Alabama, but I could easily argue that Mark D'Antonio's the best coach I've had here since Biggie and Duffy, and a guy who wants to stay here, who has done a lot of things to stabilize things. So I think it's a unlimited supply right now.
Yeah, I mean, continuity is huge. And what are you going to get that's better than Mark D'Antonio here? I mean, physically they're competing. The other thing is, you've had a year where you didn't have off the field issues again, so they go 6-6, but there's no real embarrassment.
That's a good point.
And to me, the best thing about this program this year was that there was never the wheels come off game. I mean, this is a team that if they didn't want to play together again, they could have gone into Minnesota and lost that game. They'd be home now. They'd be done. They wouldn't have to practice. They wouldn't have to deal with each other. The defense, week after week, was asked to give up 10, 12 points to try and win. It did so, and never had that game where they gave up 40 and said, you know, I mean, you just don't see that. Even great defenses a lot of times have meltdowns, or, you know, college kids. It's a sport where you really have to be up week after week, and this team was up. They just weren't good enough on offense. And, you know, I think that's a sign of the type of kids that are being recruited and what's been built that's kind of more lasting than one season.
D'Antonio, of course, has a reputation of and you guys mentioned it, how they recruit players, and maybe they're not five-star players. They might be two- or three-star players, and they get they improve during the season, getting up to three- or four-star players. So my question is, do they need to try to get more players who are more closer to being five-star players as opposed to getting the guys who aren't five-star players? And then you get lucky and you develop them into like five-star players. So should they do a better job of getting them out of the box, or is this a track they should still stay on, just recruiting players that aren't quite as good because they can't compete with the Ohio States and the Michigans and the Notre Dames?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't go out and say, we don't want that five-star kid. I mean, everybody wants these guys. There's only a few of them,
We'd like to fight Albion College for your entire recruiting class,
yeah,
too.
I mean, Will Golson was a five-star guy, and I could argue there's a lot of three-star guys who have come through here who have performed a lot better than he has, So, I mean, again, it's tough, and I think Mark D'Antonio was able to get a lot of the best players in the state for that stretch when Rich Rodriguez was here. Maybe some guys who would have gone to Michigan otherwise, like even a Chris Norman. And Chris Norman was a huge recruit, a four-star guy. Again, his career didn't quite follow that. It's amazing when you look at – I went back and looked at, the high-star guys, mm-hmm. Roland Martin and whoever over the years. And then the two – it's amazing, at least at Michigan State, how many of those – lower star guys ended up better than the high star guys. But anyway, I think they go after the best players. I mean, they had Savon Pittman, a big time guy, and then River Meyer comes in and flips him. But I think they'll still go after those guys. And so I don't know. Do you try? I don't think they're saying we need a bunch of underdogs and make them good. I mean, they'll take some of those guys, but I think they're trying to get the same players those other schools are trying to get.
Yeah, I mean, I think you evaluate who you think are the best players. You don't pay attention to stars, but those are the best guys. You go. I mean, I do understand the idea that you can't only chase five-star kids, because if you wind up with a recruiting class of six, and maybe if things went Urban Meyer in the Midwest now and Notre Dame back where it is, and Michigan recruiting the state again, you might have to develop pipelines in other areas, through coaching connections and other things, but. Yeah, I think I don't think talent level, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is a question. You look at the recruits, some of them they're bringing in next year, and again, you brought up Damian Terry. I mean, that's a player that that looks like he, now, granted, in high school, a lot of guys look like difference makers, but yeah, I don't think they're lowering their standards, and nor will they.
The best thing this staff has going, and they've done well in the state, but the best thing by far, you mentioned those coaching connections, is it's Ohio. They're all from Ohio, or most of them are. They all have long-standing connections to Ohio. That's how they get a Le'Veon Bell when people miss on them. And, you can go, there are a lot of guys like that, a Worthy, and I mean, a B.J. Cunningham. No one wanted him, so... That I don't think will change. They have really good relationships. They've treated their kids well, and these coaches know that they're going to go to a place where they actually care, that they go to class, and that they actually take care of them. And then I think they'll always be able to get at least good players out of Ohio. There's enough talent there for everyone else to pick at it. I mean, they get a guy like Jermaine Edmondson this year, out of Ohio. He was Pittman's teammate, but a guy Nebraska and a lot of schools wanted. Yeah, guys like that, I think they'll continue to get solid players out of that state.
Well, and the other thing is, you have to have, the position that's most noticeable when you're lacking it are those edge playmakers.
Yeah,
especially on offense, but on both sides, and those guys, wideouts are available everywhere. I mean, they really are. I mean, because there's so many of them, there's so many guys, and so many coaches evaluate these guys differently, and it's a position that in high school isn't really refined very often. They're mostly speed guys. Half of them play running back anyway, or option quarterback or something. They're not. So figuring out who's going to be a great wideout, there are just so many of those guys out there. And really, that's the position where if they recruit the way they have and they're able to get enough speed there, they'll be fine.
B.J. Cunningham's one of the best receivers I've ever seen at Michigan State, and they've had a lot of great ones. He's by far slower than all those guys. But he was big, he had great hands, and he learned the position and how to run routes and how to, you know, how to sell things to defensive backs. By the end, he was a great college receiver, you know. So it's development is – it's just so much bigger in football than it is in basketball.
Yes. Now, let's go back to Andrew Maxwell, because one thing – I know I had this debate with a couple of our friends. They say – the way he throws the ball, he puts maybe too much on it. He doesn't know how to throw it in there softly, or sometimes he just throws it too hard. Is that something he's really going to have to work on, how he throws the ball and puts it out there?
Yeah, but it's almost like sometimes I wonder, it's almost like a jump shot. I keep making these football-basketball comparisons. But, Brandon Dawson, man, he's got to change his form. But when you shoot that way your whole life, it's hard. Some guys... And so I don't, you know, yeah, I think Andrew Maxwell needs more touch. I think he needs to change speeds and be able to loft passes more, and he needs to throw a better deep ball. And he'll throw a ball through a brick wall, no problem, and he'll sneak in. I mean, he's made some throws this year that not many guys can make. I mean, some amazing throws. But, yeah, I do think he needs to be able to throw the touch pass better. And you have to work on that, but I know sometimes, you know, I mean, it's just how you throw. So,
what was interesting to me too is that first game against Boise State, I thought, you know, I didn't think he was great, but I thought, boy, he made those two drives late.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And his decisions looked terrific. And he made a lot of good short throws to Deion Sims and other. And I thought, okay, you know, regardless of his struggles, that won't be an issue. Yeah, he really did. Because when you look at some of those picks, you would see, like, we counted 13 drops, and that was the two most pronounced weeks, back to back against Notre Dame and Eastern Michigan from wideouts. But when you look back at some of those drops, they weren't easy catches, all of them. And yeah, they hit him in the hands, but they hit him in the hands hard, or they hit him in the hands just a little off.
Yeah,
they weren't great throws either.
Some were though, but yes,
some were. Yeah, there were a lot of really really bad drops too, but. And at some point, there may be some confidence issues with that. But yeah, it was almost surprising for a guy who'd been in this, you know, his fourth year playing quarterback at Division I, been on the scout team, been everywhere, that sort of ability to read, you know, what should be a pass that doesn't need as much zip or it's closer by, you know, didn't seem to be there. That was a little, and you know, I didn't even realize it till about week four, because maybe there just weren't that many. All of a sudden, it was like, wow, that's. Guy's 10 yards away, and you know, looks like John Elway there. I mean, there are a lot of things he needs to improve on, but I do think that having that much protection in front of you go down with injuries and the struggles they had on the offensive line, which for a while they could not run the football, even with Le'Veon Bell consistently. And then you had wide outs that you may not trust completely the positions they're going to be in, and that's a huge thing for a quarterback. I mean, he went half the year really without throwing an interception either.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they picked up. I'm not sure his confidence and just everything that was around him wasn't shaken. And you know, like anything, I mean, I can imagine, never played quarterback at beyond a driveway level. But, you know, if you don't have any confidence, I can imagine it's a pretty, pretty tough sport to play, pretty tough position.
We're talking with Lansing State Journal reporter Graham Couch and also Detroit Free Press reporter Joe Rexrow talking about Michigan State football. Well, guys, let's take a few minutes out and talk about a little bit of basketball. We've spent so much time talking about football, but let's look at the last year's team. And they made it to the NCAA tournament, like Kyle Mizzou has taken most teams. And they lost to Louisville, a team that was very athletic and very fast. Tom had a good recruiting year. But does he have enough speed to compete with some of these teams that we see in the NCAA tournament? There are some very athletic teams in the tournament. I'm not sure if they have enough athletes to compete with some of those teams.
You and your speed, Earl. I tell you what. I don't look at speed. Shoot. I mean, you talk about Appling, Dawson, Harris, Payne. Yeah, I don't think that's the I wonder if they have enough shooting.
Yeah,
I wonder if they have enough. I wonder if they have enough.
I wonder if they have enough three-point shooting.
Yeah, I wonder about that, and if they just have enough. I can't tell right now. If this team finished seventh in the Big Ten, someone told me that, I could buy it. But if someone said they were right there at the end for the championship too, I could buy that too. I saw some, you know, I think some very encouraging things for this team in the Kansas game, and at times in other games. But boy, they. Heading into, you know, a lot of December here, they just have not played well, and especially the turnovers. I mean,
yes.
They need They need to slow things down or something to stop with the ridiculous turnovers. He's had a lot of teams that have turned the ball over, but I can't remember a team like this that just had just turnovers in bunches for layups.
Yeah, and if you're going to turn the ball over, you got to create a ton too. You'd have to, if you're going to do what they're doing, you got to play a frenzied defense or something that right. you just totally buy into that sort of philosophy. I was talking to assistant coach Mike Garland early on, and he thought it's the most depth and talent and just sort of, you know, when you individual pieces they've had since the 2000-2001 team with, you know, which is, I mean, talent wise was, I mean, maybe the best team they've had there in terms of those sort of things. But things have to come together. And the thing about Draymond Green is not only was he the best player, but he was also the guy your offense ran through. He was kind of your point guard. He spaced out the floor at the four, which gave your five. He could shoot from three. He spaced out the floor, which gave your five room to work. And he was your glue guy. He was kind of everything question in one.
It's kind of a loss there.
Yeah, usually you lose one piece. It's like, you lose the glue guy. He was that's why they're struggling. I mean, he was every piece. I mean, that's a giant piece to lose. And so much more is on Appling. I think he's actually played much better than I thought. And what we've seen early in a couple in the clutch moments, I think, has been. And with Harris healthy, he and Harris have a chance to be, you know, one of the best backcourts in the country. They do have to find a way for those big guys to have room to work inside. And if you don't have, it's one thing to have guys who can make threes, and they have that with Trice and Gary Harris. But when you don't have guys that defenses fear, they don't adjust to it. And so they sag in. And then if your four-man can't hit anything beyond 12 feet, well, then they're really inside. And so that's Knicks is having all sorts of problems because of that. So they need to figure out how they're going to make all that work. But I'd rather have their talent if I was them than a lot of other teams in terms of what you have to work with. And they got a couple weeks now where they got what, you know, and they got to get this going early. And, you're going to find out real quick in Big Ten play, basically, with the Minnesota game on the road, New Year's Eve, tough team, game that really counts. And those are the games that if you're going to compete for a conference title, and I'm not saying that's a must win or anything, it's the first game of Big Ten play, but if you're going to be there at the end, those are the games you probably find a way to win.
Well, let me ask you this question because we haven't mentioned it really at all, but how important is leadership? I mean, and this is for both football and basketball. I know during football season, we said that the leadership was probably lacking a little bit, but in basketball, we know that it's real thin there. So how important is leadership to helping a team win? And let's address football and basketball.
Well, it's perfect to put them both together right now because you mentioned Draymond Green, and we've seen what Kirk Cousins is doing in the NFL, what Draymond's doing in the NBA. Again, I think in Cousins and in Green, you're talking about all-time great leaders for both of those programs, really. And I know it's easy to say something like that when it's the contemporary guys and everything, but I tell you what, you don't see many guys like Kirk Cousins. You just don't. And Draymond Green finally had that last year where he was able to actually take control of the team, and you saw what happened. So I think it's extremely important because, look, these guys, I mean, these coaches can scream at them all they want, but at some point, if it doesn't come from within, I just don't think you're going to get it done, you know? And so I think that is going to be a running theme with this basketball team all year. I think Derek Nix is really trying to be more of a leader, but it's not really his nature. It's not really something he's comfortable doing. I mean, he's more like the team jokester, you know. I think guys like him. And of course, Russell Bird, when you're playing like that and you're not getting minutes, it's how do you say hey Dawson, you need to run harder on that one. I mean, how do you do that? So I think that will be an issue. I think Keith Appling has to do more and more, and again, not really his nature. But he's a point guard. He's playing great. He has great confidence. He knows exactly where everyone should be now, and I think he knows way better now than he did a year ago. And I think that will be some of the story of this team moving forward. And for the football program, you know, I think Max Bulla has taken some real steps. You know, I think what he said before the Minnesota game, kind of calling out the offense, that's a good sign. And I think they'll be okay there. But with both of those programs, you're going to get a Cousins and a Draymond in that way, maybe once, twice, three times in your career.
No, and with basketball, I think your Appling is the guy who has the most credibility because of, you know, maybe not his personality and his history with his teammates, but in terms of the way he's playing, the way he's finished games this year, the position he plays, and the fact that nobody else really there is natural for it. They're looking for somebody, you know, in a lot of ways. And Knicks, you're right, is trying to be that. It's hard to do it from a big man spot, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Draymond was a big in some ways, but not really. And he had the ball, and he was a special personality. You know, and Bird, when you don't have your own confidence, he was going to have to be a 20-minute-a-game guy for that really to work, a guy who was really knocking down threes, averaging 8-9 points a game at least, to have that work as a primary leader. I'm not saying he doesn't have a good leadership role off the court and have other things he does that's valuable, but it's, you know, Harris is a pretty quiet kid. You know, it's not Dawson's nature, it's not Payne's nature to do it. You know, Payne speaks up from time to time, and I think that's, you know, and Denzel, somebody who, again, a point guard, though, but the ball's not really going to be in his hands this year, probably, or next as much.
Denzel and Costello eventually, I think, will be really good leaders, but eventually.
But, yeah, I mean, he's a freshman. It's very hard when you're, even if you're starting, when you're, you know, to do that when you're a freshman. Football-wise, Bulla, to me, he became, by the end of the year, and even early on, I mean, that whole defense, I don't think, lacked leadership.
Yeah.
I mean, Denikos Allen, I think, is a pretty good. I mean, Norman. I mean, there's a lot of leaders on that defense. And offensively, when you're struggling, there may be, you know, I think Le'Veon Bell at times spoke up decently. There are guys who, I don't know the dynamics within it, but when you're struggling, it is tough to have a voice when things aren't working well.
Well, let's look at both coaches, Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo. I know we know they come; they have a lot of different responsibilities and things they have to do. But how do we compare, if it's fair to compare each coach?
Compare them to each other?
Yes.
Well, D'Antonio's taller, I can tell you that. No offense, Earl. You are taller than Izzo, though, right?
Yeah. No, a little bit shorter.
No, really?
Yep.
You need to have a old school one-on-one game with him before you retire. First of all, if you look at them together, how many colleges have a basketball and football combo? It's a pretty good one. Certainly, I think Tom Izzo's a nationally elite, you know, sure thing, Hall of Fame guy, and is at a different level in his arena than D'Antonio is. I don't think there's any question about that. But you could also argue that it's harder to turn a football program than it is a basketball program. I mean, I think sustaining a basketball program, that's the impressive thing with Izzo, that he's done it with different groups, you know, for a long time now. I think it's still kind of early for D'Antonio. You saw the two-year bubble up there with, you know, great years, winning championships. Now a down year. It's an important couple of years for him, I think. I think he's established a program, but we've talked about it. The competition's getting tougher, and the expectations have gone up, and then you have a down year. So how do you respond? I do think it's a very important year coming up, and then a couple years after that. But I think he's got a very good program. He's a very good coach. And we'll see if he can ever get it to really put it together to make a run at, you know, like a national championship type thing. I mean, Tom Izzo, I think, is a threat to win it probably most years, really.
You know, what makes, you know, Izzo's record is those final fours when you had, 6-13. I mean, that's a phenomenal, an unbelievable statistic.
Jim Boeheim has three in his career.
Yeah.
For example.
And the guy just won his 900th game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
against Canisius.
Yeah.
JV, but yes, go ahead.
It's actually a close one against Detroit.
Canisius was about 300 of his wins.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's most of his wins were Canisius and the B squad. But the
hey guys, I want to thank you for coming in and talking about football and basketball. As you know, I don't have much time left, but this is probably one of our last pre-recorded shows. So I want to thank you very much, both of you, Graham Couch from the Lansing State Journal and Joe Rexroth from the Detroit Free Press, for coming in and helping us out.
It was a great time, Earl. As always, thanks for having us.
Yeah, very much appreciate it.
Thank you. This is Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and happy and prosperous holiday season.
From NPR News.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.